This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
Everybody is to leave here immediately. This cafe is closed until further notice. Clear the room at once.
How can he close me up on what ground?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Round up the usual suspects.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
In the original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
These government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat and put on the Kevlar. It's time for battle. Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is a radio show that is stopping totalitarianism one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, are you that exceptional American that I'm talking about? I suspect you are. That's why you're listening to this radio show. So welcome aboard. A lot of things going on. As you can well imagine, we're covering what's going on with the Kavanaugh situation. An accuser has come forward after 35 years in high school. We're getting down to that. That's what it comes down to. But, you know, you got to look at it this way. The left is losing. Elections have consequences. They are losing. And they look at a, 40, 50-year, 60-year reign of leftism that is about to be changed and shifted with Kavanaugh. I mean, you got to be thinking about this. This is definitely going to be putting the Supreme Court in the hands of the conservatives for generations, and maybe even longer than, even they think, which will certainly doom all of their leftist programs. From education to the military, you can name it, they could be doomed, because with a conservative court, overbearingly conservative court, which is probably going to happen if Ruth Bader Ginsburg retires under Donald Trump, you're going to get another conservative, and that's going to set them even more on fire. So they're getting desperate. This is a Hail Mary attempt to stop what is going on with the Kavanaugh selection process for Supreme Court. We are very, very happy to have with us Jenna McKay, trafficked victim and survivor of trafficking, human trafficking, sex trafficking in particular. And Jenna, welcome to Agenda 21 Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so we cover this topic quite a bit here on Agenda 21 Radio. It's a category of discussion that we refer to as the trafficking in human flesh and slavery. And just to be clear and transparent to everybody, I was actually trained in the 1980s by the Los Angeles Police Department Crimes Against Children's Task Force. It was a newly formed task force, but where I was working at the time as a school administrator, we had lots of sex trafficking going on between Los Angeles and Las Vegas along the I-15 corridor. So that's where I sort of found out about this as a young administrator. But you were actually trafficked, and this is something that you don't hear too often, is a trafficked individual comes forward to tell her story. So I really applaud you for doing this. And I know all there is, you know, not all there is, but I've been on the other end of it where I've had to enforce the law, or I've had to do a lot of investigations as a school administrator in protecting children such as yourself. Well, when you were a child, you're full grown woman now, but we still do even today. I do get calls for help to find victims such as yourself. So tell us about your story, and first of all, where are you from? Where did this all occur? And tell us how you got involved.
Well, I was born and raised in Southern California, Temecula and Marietta, and then I was also trafficked there. I grew up in a private Christian school, played really competitive volleyball, and my trafficker lured me out of high school, and I met him in high school, and he wasn't already a trafficker, but he was definitely on the path to a lot of criminal activity and started doing it when he got out of high school, and he learned of this and learned how to make money by selling me. Most trafficking victims are often taken away from their support system, which I was. He definitely put a great divide between me and my family, even going as far as having restraining orders filed against my dad to keep him away from me. But I was trafficked in an apartment 15 minutes from where I went to school, and I would have normal jobs during the day and would come home and be sold at night.
Let's stop for a second there. And he was your boyfriend, became engaged, you married him?
Yes, he married me just a few months after I turned 18. I dropped out of high school and moved in with him, and then not long after we got married.
And where were your parents in all of this?
They were separated at the time. Mm-hmm. It was during my senior year, and they were still in that area, but they had no idea that this was what was happening to me when it was. They didn't care for him. Nobody in my family really did. It wasn't like I had a big fancy wedding. No one from my family was there. But they weren't aware of what was happening. But I said they were still in that community.
So how did the a broken family, and of course that's where mm-hmm. the predation starts, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is what I've always been telling people, that that broken families are the worst way to go for kids. Period. End of subject.
Right.
And when you have a broken family, then the children are vulnerable, and predators recognize that vulnerability. Isn't that correct?
Definitely. And my sisters were both, they're older than me, and they were gone at college. So it very much felt, even though I wasn't, it felt like I was alone in it. And that made me more scared and vulnerable, and he just always seemed to be there waiting to take me away. So mm-hmm. I took it.
Sort of like rescuing you from the... How old were you when your parents divorced?
Well, they didn't divorce. They separated. I was 17. And I think it was, it was during my senior year.
And that upset you, the divorce?
Yeah, it was difficult, for sure.
Yeah.
So.
And that's where the vulnerability. See, this is what I try and tell, because I've had so much experience you know, in cases such as yours, this is all, you know, this is a, you're sort of the typical classic situation where the predator comes on board and they look for behavior patterns in everybody, and mm-hmm. they know what to look for. And then they predation, they're predators. They prey upon you. And this is why I tell families, don't divorce. it's stressful if you're 5 years old, 6 years old, and now see in more advanced stages, you're 17 years old, and people would think, and parents considering divorce even think, well, the child's more stable at 17 than say 13, so let's go ahead and separate. But that's just not the case, is it?
Right. No. And one of the things that people ask me sometimes when I share my story, they say, well, I don't understand how he lured you out and how you were where your vulnerabilities were, because you weren't a foster kid. You weren't a runaway, you know, necessarily. And I said, well, it started with my home life, and it started with my surroundings and my education. I was very in this bubble at this Christian school where I wasn't taught about the real world and how it worked and what was out there. So not knowing, not being educated on it made me extremely vulnerable.
Well, you know, the thing is that a lot of people don't understand that predators are predators. They're called that because they understand when somebody is vulnerable. And we got a break coming up. When we come back, I want to talk about the exposing those vulnerabilities and what happens to people like yourself and other kids. And why parents are so essential. A father and mother together are very important in this. Anyway, stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-558-7297 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-558-7297 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-558-7297. That's 1-800-558-7297. Again, 1-800-558-7297.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-711-5095 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-711-5095. Again, that's 800-711-5095.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. My employees and I would like to thank you for making MyPillow possible. Years ago, when I invented MyPillow, I thought I was the only one out there with problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I'd flip-flop all night, or wake up with a sore neck or headache. So that's why I invented MyPillow. You can adjust MyPillow's patented fill to your exact individual needs to help you get to sleep faster and stay there longer, to get the quality sleep you need. I back it with my 10-year warranty and my 60-day money-back guarantee. And now to thank you, I'm bringing back my best offer ever. Buy one of my MyPillows and get another one absolutely free.
Call 800-266-4715. That's 800-266-4715 when you use the promo code AGENDA. 800-266-4715, promo code AGENDA.
Agenda.
There are enough laws on the books by Congress that are very clear in terms of how we have to enforce our immigration system.
Even doing the UN, one community at a time. It's Paul Preston.
And welcome back to Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, agenda21radio.news. And with us right now is Jenna McKay. She's a traffic survivor and victims advocate. She was trafficked, and she's a survivor. Who shares her traumatic experiences to educate communities and inspire hope to those still suffering. She started the Jenna McKay Foundation to mentor trafficked victims and to help them back into society after trauma, and to train law enforcement, hospital staff, and the public on child sex trafficking and human trafficking. And we're talking to her right now, and where we left off was, I think, a very, very important moment in the predation that goes on with children that are vulnerable and why they're vulnerable. That's an important thing. And Jenna, we were talking about, you had a divorce going on or a separation of your family and when you're senior, in your senior year, and it was very traumatic. And then along comes somebody who really was a predator, but understood and saw and recognized that you were vulnerable. And that's kind of the key thing, isn't it?
Yes, definitely.
That these predators, these predators, and they see this, they understand it. They there's a lot of nuances to vulnerability, isn't there?
Right, and he was particularly looking back now. I didn't realize it then, but now seeing everything and the way he did things and the way he talked to me and what he told me, just a master manipulator, and. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would watch, I shared some of this when I spoke last night, I would watch him manipulate his own family as to why I looked the way I looked. And when I was being trafficked, I mean, I had visible signs. I was losing weight, my hair is falling out, all these things that show signs of somebody experience extreme trauma. And I'd watch him manipulate pastors and people in the Navy that are were in his family, and I thought, wow, he can really get away with this. He can really make them believe anything that he's telling them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wow. So when the trafficking started, how did that whole thing play out to begin with?
It was never like, Jenna, you're going to go do this. We need the money. You're going to go do this, and this is how it works, and coaching me on how to sell myself. I did not know that he had advertised me online. And at that time, the year 2006, and the things that I saw him on were chat rooms and Craigslist. And so I'm sure that's where he had advertised my picture. And I don't know how he advertised me, but it really seemed like the way that the rapes were, it was like, come rape my wife. It was very violent. And the first night, it was just a man came to our door, which I was used to. He had friends, and he was growing and selling marijuana and prescription drugs at the time. So I was used to strangers coming to the door. But this one, he welcomed in, and I was taken back to the room and raped. And he was a part of that first rape. And, you know, they say when you're experiencing rape or trauma that it's fight, flight, or freeze. And it was, for me, that first time, a lot of fight and then just frozen after as a just complete shock of what just happened.
Right. And then there was a second time.
Yes, and this happened over the course of a year, mostly in the summer. And it was always out of the apartment. And it was always the same way. I never knew when it was going to happen. And then the last time, he had taken me to a motel. And after that, I escaped because I saw where he was taking this. I saw that this wasn't going to end.
Mm-hmm.
Traffickers often, it's almost like they dangle a carrot in front of your face, like just a little bit longer, and then we'll live happily ever after. You know, we're almost done. I promise. No more. One more week. One more month. But I saw after that last experience that his plan was to continue this, and it would get worse and worse.
Well, how long did this play out for you?
It was over the course of the year of 2006. And then towards the end of the year, I got away and I divorced him and left.
How was the escape, so to speak?
Well, it just goes to show how narcissistic he was, because I told him that I wanted to leave him, and I called his mom and his dad and my own father, and we met at his stepdad's church, and he knew what was happening, and he willingly came, and he put on this whole show of, oh, I love you, don't go, crying. And his stepdad looked at me and said, well, why do you want to leave him, Jenna? And all I said was, he's growing and selling marijuana out of the apartment. And he looked at him and said, you did this to yourself. And I just thought, wow, if he only knew what he was really doing to me. But I didn't know how to speak for myself, and I didn't even know what that was called. I knew that I was being raped and he was getting paid, but I didn't know anything about human trafficking. And so that's all I said. And that night I left.
Did he ever try and get back with you or what?
I met with him a few times after to kind of, his main concern was that I was going to tell people. You know, even when he was doing it to me, he would come to my place where I'm working and shine the lights into the windows and watch me. And he would show up, you know, and watch me where I'm at to make sure I'm not telling people. And that was really his concern. And I met with him several times and assured him that I wasn't going to tell anybody. I just wanted to move on. It was difficult to get him to sign the divorce papers. I don't remember too much of that, but I remember it was hard for that part. But he never really tried. I think he knew. I think he was just always looking out for himself, though. So
this is a fairly unusual case in that you married the person that was trafficking you. I know this happens, but this is a very unusual case that you married him and you stayed with him for a while, and of course realized that. And I want to maybe address that issue, because a lot of people, you know, say, "Well, gosh, why didn't you get away from him after the first time?" It's just not that easy, is it?
Mm-hmm. No, it's not. And to be taken from your support system, and that's where I would love speaking and educating high school students on this, because if I had known what my options were, I mean, I didn't even know that there were safe houses. I didn't know that there was resources out there for me. And so my idea was, okay, well, call 911, but what do I tell them?
Right.
That my husband's having men come rape me and he's getting paid. And I believed what he was telling me. He's like, no one would believe that. That's crazy. And I didn't know what my options were. And I had an encounter with a police officer, and I was looked at like the criminal, and it really shut me down. That was a really life altering moment to keep me quiet, the way that I was treated. So
you had an encounter with a police officer about this. Was this during, while you were still married to him?
Yes, it was at the very beginning. And he was being very abusive at this time. He was raping me himself and having his friends do things to me. I don't believe the trafficking had started yet, but I was arrested and for doing something that he had me do. It wasn't to do with trafficking. And the police officer that was arresting me looked at my trafficker and said, well, why would you want to be with a girl like her? And what that did was make me feel like I'm the bad person, when I thought, gosh, if you only knew what he was doing to me at home, maybe you'd be arresting him.
Mm-hmm. And so you couldn't articulate it because you didn't know what it was all about, actually. So there's a great deal of confusion and fear. I want to get to the point or the fact that it's basically fear that was keeping you in that relationship.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I was very afraid of him, and he escalated more and more, and I abided to keep him from getting angry. There was only one physical violence besides the sexual abuse that happened, but his emotional and verbal abuse and his threats were so real to me that I never wanted it to escalate. So, you know, 18-year-old naive Jenna just basically did what I was told.
And how old was he at the time when you were 18?
He was just a year older.
Wow. Did he ever, before this, though, did he ever have any kind of relationships with other people where he was involved with this kind of stuff?
No. And I met him. He was going to the same high school as me. I do know that he lived with his grandma and grandpa in Washington State until he was about 13. Then he moved back with his mom to California. And I do know some things that he had told me that I felt bad for him at the time when he told me. Now I see how he became who he was. His grandpa was physically abusive to his grandma, and his grandpa also introduced him to pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where that mindset really sunk in at a very young age.
I see. So that's where that, so the abuse was learned by him from his grandfather, sexually anyway, the deviancy was learned at a young age.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting, but, you know, I sit here as an educator and generationally looking back over 41 years of experience. And, you know, I started back in 1973 as an educator. And the situation back then is that there seemed to be, even though people were violent, this sort of thing was going on, there wasn't this level of it. It was really kind of undiscovered. It wasn't until, it was undiscovered in many ways, but it was there. But the growth of this whole thing, as I've seen it over the years, is been incredible to where we have just so much of it now. It's just almost like wide open now, openly being done and talked about. It's being talked about, but at such a scale that I've never known before and very widespread. And I'd say you'd agree with that, wouldn't you? There's just very, very widespread, much more so than ever before.
Yeah, definitely. And people don't realize, you know, like pornography and just the objectification of women in general, you're feeding into it when you're participating in anything like that. Because it all starts, you know, strip clubs, girls are often started being trafficked there, and then they're taking into brothels and homes and hotels and escort agencies and so on. And so when you're participating in that and giving your money to that, you're feeding into victims of being trafficked.
Mm-hmm. Now, what my point was is, and I'm going to go back to your ex, is that I've always said, because I had very close contact with students in an administrative sense, I sponsored a lot of social events and stuff like that with students back in the day. But over time, I was noticing that the approach of boys and girls, of young teenagers to one another, the dating process was becoming worse and worse and worse over time. In other words, the communication skill between girl and boy in particular started to degenerate, and the boys, being not really trained properly, I don't think, as young men growing up, were very, very awkward in their approach to affections and things like that, that would be sort of a normal, healthy thing with a boyfriend-girlfriend thing. And the violence factor started to increase with young men. And I'm looking back at 2006, which is the year you're talking about, and I can kind of understand that young men growing up were very, very awkward in their approaches towards women. And, you know, what they learned from other men, or what they learned from the TV or whatever, or through rap music in particular, that's one of the things I really saw a big change back around the early 1990s, the late 80s and 90s, is that rap music in particular really started to, the misogynistic, melodies, if you will, or messaging through those songs was just absolutely over the top. And I think that's when we started to see that breakdown in communication between boys and girls, males and females, to where you had the rise of such things as, you know, overt sexism and sexual abuse, as we've seen, because the violent nature of how young men approach women is very much sort of like taken for granted these days.
Right, definitely. And I agree. I mean, the way I see that teenagers talk to in those situations now is much more aggressive, much more casual, and arrogant. And then it was, like you said, the awkwardness. And I remember that.
Yeah. And so now here we have today where I don't think, we really have to pull it back. I mean, hopefully we have a different president, different morality starting to settle over the country. And, you know, this is, I don't know if you're old enough to understand this. There's a cycle in all this stuff. And I think that we've turned the corner with Donald Trump being elected, that we're going to be a little bit more conservative in our values. At least that's what I hope. And, of course, with your help, you know, getting your message out, this is a critical, I think, time in our nation's history to be able to address these social ills that we have. And this is a big one. And, again, the whole thing about trafficking. See, with us on Agenda 21 Radio, we study, you know, trafficking of human, you know, tens of thousands, millions of people being trafficked at one time around the world at one time, which is just a mind-boggling thing to look at, but it's still all one and the same. It's the trafficking in human flesh and slavery, and that's basically what you were, was a sex slave.
Right, right, and without even knowing it, you know, and people ask all the time, why didn't you run? You know, after that first time, you just run away, even if it's on foot. And I, one of the things, because I did try to run. And so when people ask that, I say, well, I did run. That's why I'm here in front of you today. But are you saying, why didn't I run sooner? Well, I tried. And part of it, like I said, was not knowing what my options were. But also, he was always there, and he went to great lengths. So when I started to run away, he started locking me in the closet, and he had already figured that I would do this, that I would try to get away from him as soon as it started happening. And we had a trip to Las Vegas, which is where he got the idea to sell me. And when we got home, he put a lock on the closet, and he started putting me in the closet to keep me from running, and he'd keep me in there overnight. And it was always after the rapes, and then the next day he'd let me out. And it was his arrogance. He just acted like, okay, get up and go to work, as if nothing ever happened. And I just, to be in that kind of trauma and to be a slave and in my own home, it's like the despair and the hopelessness. How do I get out of this? And how do I tell somebody what this is and what's happening to me? And they talk about, why didn't you run? Well, you think about slaves in the Civil War time. They would live next door to their masters, go pick the cotton, and then did they try to escape? No, they went right back into their house and were slaves. So it's the brainwashing and manipulation is so big and intense. And until you really experience it, it's hard to understand what keeps you there.
And of course, now you're older and wiser, and you're, you know, wait a minute here. I can, you know, that's not acceptable. But at the time, you're very, very frail. And being 18, by the way, this is one of the things that adults and parents in particular, especially if they're thinking about getting divorced, is that divorce is something that sticks with a kid no matter, even if they're 19, 20, or 21. It sticks with you all your life, and especially it's very traumatic. People don't get that, but it's very, very traumatic on children when parents do divorce. That's why we try and keep families together and intact over the broken family and then putting it all together to repair it, because damage is done for years and generations. And, of course, this is where we have to sort of draw the line now and encourage people to stay in intact families. That was one of the things I always did as a school administrator, was especially with special education students, because special education students, are almost 100% of them, a large number, are from divorced families or broken families, or they don't have parents, or they're foster children. And the trauma that they experience and the sex trafficking is just over the top. So you decided to open up a foundation to bring this to light to everybody, and tell us how that all played out.
Well, I had started back in 2012. I started writing my book. When I came out with my story, it was 6 years after what happened to me, and I was living in Virginia. I was married to my son's dad, who's a Marine, and I had a breakdown, and I went to a mental hospital, and what they had me do was write my story out from birth to that time. And what it did was put it in perspective, my whole life into perspective to me of what happened to me. And it also, I read it and I wrote on the top of the notebook, book, question mark. I thought, wow, maybe someday I'll share this publicly. And I started the book. I got in contact with my high school English teacher and we started writing. And I was obviously still going through therapy and healing at this time. And here we are now. The book's getting ready to be published. I had to get somebody else to help me with the book. And during that process of finding somebody to help me, my publisher talked to me and realized that I really have a passion for helping girls like 18-year-old me. And so he said, I think you should start a foundation and I can help you, and the Jenna McKay Foundation. And what that is assisting girls, getting them safe to safe places, mentoring them, really looking them in the eye and being real with them. Hey, I was there. I know what this journey is like, but I can help guide you. Being the person I needed, if I had that person sitting down with me and helping guide me through life, because when I got away from my trafficker, I tried going back to school. I dropped out of classes. I had PTSD, complex PTSD, but I didn't know. And I was struggling so much, and the story was deep inside of me. So I needed that person. And then the business side of this is to train law enforcement, hospital staff, first responders, the public in general, on how to respond with victim-centered care and trauma-informed care. Then hiring survivors that have gotten healing to give them employment opportunity. It's very difficult for trafficking survivors to find work. They have medical issues. They have big gaps in job history. They have criminal records. So to not only give them employment opportunity, but to also empower them by training the professionals that often failed them when they were a victim, and to show them, hey, this is what happened to me. This was so wrong. This kept me there. And now look at her. This is what you can do better for the next girl.
Well, you know, one of the things that gives up the traffickers is people being aware of the nuances of their behaviors. And this is something that's really, really important. And, of course, it's what I tell people, or used to tell people when I was on school grounds, that I could always spot a divorced child a mile away. And, you know, because having been a divorced child myself and having gone through it, you know, you have a great deal of empathy. But having worked with, you know, thousands of kids over time, you know, you can detect the behavior pattern. You look for those subtleties of the students to see whether they're for their own well-being. You know, that's just part of your job. If a child appears to be upset, depressed, or whatever, you pull them in and say, what's going on? And you try and work through it. That's kind of what your job is, actually, as somebody who's in, you know, public educator and so on. It should be. You should be looking out for the well-being of your children. But, you know, the ability to spot and detect somebody who's really hurt in the sense of a divorce or a broken family or something is what the predator understands. And so those are the nuances that they know about. But if you want to stop it, you have to know that somebody has been, I guess you would say, traumatized by something, and then be able to protect them. Go ahead.
Yeah, and when you said that, like protecting our kids and seeing the signs, I look back on my high school. You know, here I was I had been at that same school since I was in kindergarten. They'd known me my whole life, saw what kind of kid I was, what family I came from, good grades, good social groups, always involved in sports and the community, and headed to play college volleyball. And then I drop out of high school and throw it all away and move in with this guy. Nobody from that school asked me, not one coach, not one teacher, principal, said, "What's going on, Jenna? Why are you doing this? Here, how can I help you?" And that could have prevented things from happening, because when they didn't ask, it made me feel invisible to everybody except for him. Mm. He was the only one there waiting for me.
Very good point.
And I was gone. So,
and that's exactly the trap people fall into, is that he's really, the predator is actually exacerbating the dependency for him with you, and he is the security point that your family no longer gives you, that your school no longer gives you. And that's an important part, and that's why I say with educators, you got to be able to see these things and understand these things. Like, you had some obvious stuff going on in your life, you had, and then it led to your dropping out. You probably had grades that were declining, is that right?
Yeah, my grades started to decline. Then I felt hopeless, like I couldn't catch up and I couldn't go play college volleyball. And he was there saying, "Well, my mom dropped out of high school because she was pregnant with me and she got her GED, and look how successful she is now. Mm-hmm. I'll help you get your GED. I'll help you. We'll figure out what you want to do and I'll help you go to school," which, you know, obviously was not what happened.
Right, right.
But that's I did get my GED while I was being trafficked, and that's something I knew I needed something when I decided I wanted to get away with him. I knew I needed something to give me. I felt like I needed that to get away. And I was secretly studying with my sixth grade teacher to get my GED, and I went and I passed. And this was during the trauma towards the end. Felt like getting my PhD.
well, you should get a PhD right now. So, but this is part of the training I think you probably provide, isn't it?
Yes, I talk about all of this, and it's the trainings are 2 hours up to 4 hours, because I can really go into it, and really share. And I love having survivors, because I love their stories. All of our stories are similar but so different, and it really gives that perspective. And I've heard, when I've trained hospital staff, you know, I've heard them say, "Well, the training was great, but when you had the survivor speak, then it really opened my eyes, because we're painting the picture for them and we're reaching not just their mind and giving them this information, but we're reaching their heart, and they're in a business of service and helping people. So they want to help and they want to know what to do."
Well, I can remember when we had this course on this, and this is really what drove it home, and you just sort of reminded me of the training. But when we had the training by the LAPD and Crimes Against Children's Task Force, and we brought up all this stuff about sex trafficking and how it goes on and stuff like that, especially if you're in the pedophile mode, you actually kidnap and keep the people, and lock them up in boxes, lock them up in underground vaults and things like that. It's really, really extreme. And oftentimes those children do not get out of it. Isn't that correct?
Right. No, yeah. And for trafficking, the statistics show that someone that's trafficked has a 7-year lifespan, whether it's suicide, drugs, alcohol, the trafficker or the person buying them, killing them, they don't. And I almost died twice. I had very close experiences, one while I was being trafficked and one 6 years later, which was a result of the trafficking. So it's really a life or death situation. And that's why it's so important for the public to be aware and understand what to do, because it's not just helping a girl or rescuing, being a part of it. It's saving her life.
Well, it's also, one of the things that was pointed out last night, and again, you want to bring this to a point, young boys or boys in general, and even young men are trafficked all the time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's like rape. The statistics, show that girls are raped more, but really, how are we able to monitor that, judge that? Because boys just don't come forward as much.
Right.
Boys were taught in the society to be masculine, and you can't be a victim of a sex crime. And so they're not reporting that.
Yeah, and that's a more difficult thing. But I wanted to get back to the point about you being able to make the point. I can remember in that class that I was taking, you know, we're all talking about the theories, and they're showing us this, and they're showing us that, and all that stuff. And it really didn't sink in until they actually marched someone in who had been trafficked and sexually abused, and then another one, then another one. And we, I'll never forget, we're all sitting around going, oh my gosh, here it is, it's real with this person. And so you make that reality for everybody who takes these courses, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to hear it firsthand. And I mean, I can go in and train these professionals, and I can see some of them, you know, they're such busy schedules, and I see they have a lot on their mind. And sometimes they're like, do I really need this class? And am I going to get anything from it? And then when the survivors start sharing their story, when I start sharing my story, they look up and there's tears in their eyes. They're feeling the emotion. Sometimes I can make them laugh because there's points in my story that it's funny. And then they're writing notes. They're eager to learn. And I've had doctors come up to me and say, I know that I've had girls come through my room, and I know that they were trafficked now, and now I can spot it. So it's so important that we keep this going and have more survivors empowered to keep educating.
You know, one of the things I was explaining, or I have explained before, is some of my duties are, you know, being a school administrator and also somebody who was involved with truancy issues at schools. And somebody said, well, you know, tell us, how did it all happen for you? What happened? Tell us a story about sex trafficking. And one of the stories that I tell, one of them, was that there's a certain company that would come in and rent a whole bunch of rooms at a hotel, you know, for like maybe three or four nights, because these guys go out in the field, they come back, you know, that sort of thing. And one day I got a call from a student in a hotel room, kind of about 30, 40 miles away from the school, and said, Mr. Preston, this is so-and-so, and I've been with this guy for three nights, and he's left, and I don't know what to do. Young boy. Mm-hmm. So our resource officer, and we meet with the local sheriff and police, and we go to the hotel room and find that the young man, of course, had been trafficked and left there by his pimp. And, of course, it was very interesting as we broke the whole story. We ultimately caught the pimp. But my point is that this was a situation where the pimp took him to the hotel for the services of another man. That's a pretty common story, actually, is from what I found out.
Right.
And that's a reality I'm sure most people don't understand happens.
Right. Absolutely.
So tell us how we can get a hold of you, and how we can get on board.
So there's lots of ways. I'm starting to have more volunteers come on board, and I have a training at Yuba College for volunteers, a meeting October 4th, 6 p.m. There'll be information on Facebook, Jenna McKay Foundation Facebook page, of exactly where to go, and a little more information on it. But I'll be teaching volunteers how all the different ways they can help, mentoring, being part of fundraising committees, and so on. And you can go to jennamckay.com if you want to donate to the foundation. And what that money does is I always provide horse therapy, helps me and continues to help me. And I send my girls, give them the option to go to, it's in Yuba City now. It's called Youthful Courage Stables, and she gives them horse therapy. And the money donated will go to things like that, or helping them get their GED, driving them to doctor's appointments, court, whatever it is that they need. I also have a large amount of clothes that are donated so that girls that don't have families and so on. I can provide them with clothes and hygiene products. So JennaMcKay.com, it's M-C-K-A-Y-E. And so there's lots of ways you can help from behind the scenes or come to the volunteer training and get more involved.
Awesome. Listen, Jenna, thank you very much for being with us here on Agenda 21 Radio. And we'll definitely have to have you back on a little bit later, maybe it's another 6 months, and see how things are going.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. Jenna McKay Foundation, traffic survivor. A traffic survivor. We'll be right back. Got a break coming up here on Agenda 21 Radio, so stay with us. We'll be right back. And remember, visit agenda21radio.news.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-826-1132. That's 800-826-1132. Again, 800-826-1132.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. My employees and I would like to thank you for making MyPillow possible. Years ago, when I invented MyPillow, I thought I was the only one out there with problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I'd flip-flop all night, or wake up with a sore neck or headache. So that's why I invented MyPillow. You can adjust MyPillow's patented fill to your exact individual needs to help you get to sleep faster and stay there longer, to get the quality sleep you need. I back it with my 10-year warranty and my 60-day money-back guarantee. And now to thank you, I'm bringing back my best offer ever. Buy one of my MyPillows and get another one absolutely free.
Call 800-266-4715. That's 800-266-4715 when you use the promo code AGENDA. 800-266-4715, promo code AGENDA.
Back to Agenda 21 Radio with your host, Paul Preston.
And welcome back to Agenda21Radio.news. Wow. What an interview there with Jenna McKay, and traffic survivor and victims advocate from Jenna McKay Foundation. And, you know, that's the way it goes. That's one of the ways, that's one of the stories and how it happens for sex trafficking. It is really one-on-one stuff. That's the way it works. Emotional dependency and codependency and things of that nature. That's kind of the way it is. That's sort of the nuts and bolts. Jenna did a really good job of telling her experience, and we're really, really happy that she was with us here on Agenda 21 Radio. These are always the good things that we can report on. And I say the good things, it's very unsettling. We understand that. But, you know, now that you're involved, or at least have heard about this, you can do something about it. You can look for some of those signs and symptoms and become aware. You just never really know. You just never really know how to do things like this. So anyway, thanks for listening to Agenda 21 Radio. Become more aware. We'll have more information about Jenna and her foundation up on Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit NewCaliforniaState.com. That's NewCaliforniaState.com. And here we go again. It's another 3 hours down in the can. Anyway, thanks for listening to Agenda 21 Radio. And remember, stay strong, America. Stay strong. We are exceptional Americans.
We're
Cindy Dow and SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
You're listening to Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio. Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.